Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andy Shea. How we doing this week, Andy? Are you staying nice and cool?
Everybody's trying to stay cool, right, Jimmy? Yeah, we've been poolside and will continue to be poolside this week.
Same here, Andy. And, you know, I will always fall back on a line that I use all the time. You're allowed to gripe about the weather, either cold or hot, but not both.
Nope, not both.
I save my complaining for the winter and the cold weather, so I'm not going to complain when it gets hot out.
I hate the cold. Hate it. Despise cold. I could live where it's 75 degrees, 365 days a year. 75 degrees or higher for the temperature. I despise the cold. Hot does not bother me one bit.
I'm with you, Andy, and that's why they invented air conditioning and swimming pools. So we're both on the same path there. Hey, before we get started with our football talk, you're a soccer guy, right?
I'm a big soccer guy. I'm okay. A huge soccer guy.
So you're very vested in the World Cup, hanging on everything the U.S. team does?
I'm not hanging on everything the U.S. team does. I am supporting the United States team as an American. However, I have strong rooting interests spread out throughout the World Cup. I follow players. There's other teams I like. I can't get enough World Cup. I watch as much as I can.
Okay, so I'm curious now, your rooting interests in other teams, does that have to do with your time, international time, time you spent in other countries?
It did. It also has to do with, like, players and which teams kind of I like and play. Am I an England fan? And do I root for the Three Lions? You bet I do. England versus the United States, I'd be torn. I don't mind Germany. They annoy me. I'm kind of glad they're out of the World Cup. And, you know, I love the way Spain plays. I think Argentina is the best team. I think France could overwhelm anybody on any given day and make it look like a one-team tournament. So I'm not a big France fan, but I have a tremendous amount of admiration and respect for the way France goes about its business. So there's a lot I look at in the World Cup. I'm loving the African nations and the way they're coming forward. I'm heartbroken for Senegal, but I think the Congo played unbelievable against England earlier this week. So there's one team I don't like, Mexico. I can't root for Mexico. I don't like Mexico. I've never been a fan of Mexican football. So they're like the one team that I will overtly root against. Although you could argue they're one of the three best teams right now in this World Cup.
Okay, Andy. Now, I'm the typical American. I watch when the U.S. plays, and my interest is just rooting for the home country. But I do have the one question.
Sure.
The player getting the red card.
Absolutely.
Good call?
Great call. That guy was under his skin and pissing him off the whole game. He raked the back of his leg. That is bad intention. And he got caught on camera. He made it look good live, and it didn't look like a foul. But raking the back of a guy's legs like that, that is not an accident. Players can do that, and he got caught. You didn't see him losing his mind. The coaches kind of, like, put his arms up like, but those that know the game and follow it very closely and know it well, that was bad intention and he got caught. And I think he 100% deserved a red card. If I'm watching the game and one of the Bosnia guys rakes one of our guys down the back of his leg like that with bad intention, I'm looking for a red card and seeing that guy gone.
Well, I'm not as sure as you about intent. Again, don't know the game well enough. What I will say, though, is the punishment, having to miss, you know, play shorthanded the rest of the game.
Yep.
And also miss the next game. Boy, that is a heavy, heavy penalty. And I would see that as being controversial. All right, let's. How about we talk some football, Andy? American football.
We have been talking football.
We'll go with American football. And let me just tell you something. I am really fascinated, Andy, by most folks look at players getting compensated as a negative. Maybe not that they're paid something, but they see the, boy, recruiting now has come down to who offers the most money, that type of thing. And I think it turns a lot of people off. I get that. But for me, I have found myself really fascinated by how teams now handle this. This has changed how you recruit, how you handle the portal. There once was a time where if you had you're a high school kid, you had a scholarship offer from, say, Ohio State, and you had a second offer from Illinois, not much of a decision to make. You go to Ohio State. Now, though, with money part of it, it's not so clear cut, is it?
No, it's capitalism, Jimmy. It's, you know, how can you get the most value from your dollar spent? And yeah, I understand what you're saying about inherently it's not problematic that the players are making money. The amounts have increased greatly in a rapid fashion, right? It's changed a lot even in the last three seasons, right? Like, go back to 2023. And look at the transfer portal and, you know, the beginning and early stages of NIL and look at it now. It's a much different ballgame in terms of the dollars and cents. And the speed with which it changed means there's no time to sort of understand any, you know, trends and what's a good value proposition. And so you kind of have to do, you're still in the, there's still a lot of flying and building going on as much as it's changing quickly. So, but I've always been a big proponent of a level playing field, and I don't have a problem with what the game has become in terms of the dollars and cents behind it, because I don't think the inherent sort of what the pageantry and the beauty of college football comes down to, it hasn't been lost because of the money. I don't think yes, it has changed, but it has not gone away. If it's gone away, it's a game we used to love and miss now, right, Jimmy? Instead, I don't think the things that really grab you and pull you in have necessarily changed that much because of the money. If anything, above all else, excuse me, it has become a deeper, more level playing field, and it has become more balanced and wide open. I mean, you know, Miami barely makes it in the tournament, plays in the national championship game. Indiana freaking wins the college football national championship. What more evidence do you need that, yeah, you might not like it, but everybody's playing a little bit of the same game. Are there deep dive differences in terms of pockets and dollars and cents? Yes. But has what the game, you know, was built on has it really changed all that much? And I don't feel it has. In fact, I think it continues in some ways to get a little bit stronger because of the money.
Well, I think a lot of folks, when this began, where players were going to get paid, the theory was, okay, we're going to have a greater disparity. The strong will get stronger, the weak will get weaker.
Count me among them. Yeah.
Has not been the case.
Not even close.
The reason is, a few years back, again, that example I gave, and I just randomly picked Ohio State. I could have been Georgia, could have been Alabama, you know, could have been any one of those ultra blue bloods. And I took Illinois versus, you know, Vanderbilt or, you know, Mississippi State or, you know, average teams. And you would always, the blue blood would always get the player if both those teams wanted them. Well, now that has changed. If Illinois is willing to offer the player more money than Ohio State is, Illinois could very well get that player. In fact, most of the time, they probably will. So that leads to the question now, how do you build a team? How do you do it differently? The one obvious answer, Andy, is use dollars and cents. Use that power.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps the best example is Texas Tech. You know, the epitome of average program, but they flex their financial muscle. They were a playoff team a year ago. They look like, you know, they're going to spend the money. They're going to have at least a playoff roster for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and look at Penn State a year ago. Clearly a playoff roster. Coaching change, yeah, that matters. Do you identify Penn State as having a playoff roster right now? Kind of maybe, right? Like potentially, right? We're not throwing them under the bus, but they're not a team that had the clear-cut potential that it had even 12 months ago. That's why it's year to year. It's not cyclical anymore. It's more year to year than anything else.
That's a good point. It really is, because
teams
change so much year to year. Now, you know, Penn State with the coaching change, really exaggerated that issue. But
absolutely,
it could happen to you even without a coaching change. Andy, we're not finished with this topic. Got lots of questions for you when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. What we're talking about is with the changes in college football, specifically with money involved, it's changed how you build your team, okay? I want to use, Andy, baseball, which I feel like I know baseball pretty well, but I think it's a pretty close analogy to what's going on in college football. You have budgets now. That's a factor in how you build your team. You have teams, you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers have so much more money than the Tampa Bay Rays or the Milwaukee Brewers. So there's a difference. But within the scheme, you could look at those lower income teams. I mentioned Milwaukee and Tampa, but I could throw out there teams like the A's, the Pirates. There are teams that succeed even with a limited budget, like Tampa and Milwaukee. Teams that don't, And on the high end, there's teams that succeed, like the Dodgers. There's high spending teams that fail, like my Mets.
Yes.
So what is the strategy here, Andy? You know, you and I shared with you a list that I found online that kind of shows how position by position what the price of players are. And just to give you an idea, quarterback, obviously at the high end, it says 1 to 4+ million. Wide receivers are $500,000 to $1 million. And you could go position by position. So, Andy, let's say you're not one of the blue bloods. You're not Georgia or Texas or Ohio State flexing that financial muscle. You're a team, you know, middle of the road, middle of the pack. How does that, how does this money factor influence how you're building a team?
So you've got to identify a few things. I think this is a really cool exercise. I think we're going to get into some fun conversations for our audience. So for me, I think one of the first questions you have to answer is, which costs more, right? Where can I get at least some value for my money? Does it cost more to spend in the transfer portal, using your baseball example, free agency? Or does it cost more for that a particular position in recruiting, aka your farm system and drafting, right? So it might depend on the position. So you might kind of have two approaches to one position, but you got to know which one costs more, right? Does it cost more to pay for a transfer portal quarterback, or does it cost more to recruit a five-star quarterback, right? Like, understand what those two are to give you a baseline to start. So that's my first exercise, as identifying where does it cost more based on positions. Then very next for me, what am I willing to overspend on? In other words, what needs do I have and what am I willing to overspend on, while at the same time understanding your needs and saying, I am not willing to overspend on this front, right? Understand where you'll stretch. Understand where your line in the sand is, right? Both of them, they both matter greatly, because I think you can get lost in the middle. There is no salary cap, but you could get lost in the middle and spend money poorly. So understand your clear intentions. And the last thing, foundationally, the last thing I want to go to, and I'm sure we're going to get into devil in the details, but sort of foundationally, you have to understand your core values, kind of like a budget. I think budgets, they are a reflection of your value system, because where you spend your money is a reflection of what is important to you, right? So understand what your core values are as a program, and make sure you're spending, aka your budget, and where you put your money is a reflection of that, right? If you understand your core values, your budget should look you back in the mirror and you be able to reflect that for the most part. I think that's sort of a lost exercise that could be very valuable in this thing. Sort of like, this is what we're looking for. This is what our value spend is. These are what our core values are. Can I look in the mirror and are they a reflection of it? So I would say in the first year under Matt Campbell at Penn State, I think they have a mirror, right? They're just getting started. They have assets. They're going to spend more in the near future. But right now, they've taken a very good first step for what they're willing to spend, and how they're willing to do it is a reflection of their core values. So those are sort of the foundation things, I think, because as you said, look, a quarterback's 1 to 4 million. This is not chump change. This is a big chunk of money. Understand those things. Make sure you have that clear, and then you start writing your checks.
There's a lot of things, and again, I'm going to use a bit of a baseball example, where do you overpay for a position for a player? And you try to get value for your dollar. And there's a saying in baseball with free agency, if you're going to be sane and rational about it, you're never going to sign a free agent.
Correct.
Because with 30 teams, there's always going to be somebody willing to go beyond value. So now you have the situation in college football, and I think it's different for different teams. The Dodgers spend differently than the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Rays have to do it differently because their budget is very different. So now if you're you mentioned, you know, the quarterback position, and let's hit this thought that you had about, do I develop my own or do I go to the portal for the position? Now, a high-end quarterback out of high school, you're going to pay him a lot of money, Andy, no matter what.
Correct.
And if you already have a quarterback, a starter back, it's dead money that first year or two, isn't it?
It is dead money. That's where you got to – am I willing to overspend at that position on a consistent basis? That's why you have to have your understanding of what you're willing – am I willing to run 18 to 24 months of dead money for possibly 12 to 18 months of live wire money? So those are value propositions. It's a quarterback's always going to be the hardest because you're going to pay the most and you can always get one. You can always buy one.
You can, but now, you know, at the quarterback position, now I'm going to use the NFL. Howie Roseman with the Eagles always seems to value the quarterback position. And he gets his next quarterback while the current quarterback is still there, okay? And the feeling is that's an investment worthwhile. Now, is that the same thing at the collegiate level, or is this something where you, Indiana now, is immensely successful?
Annual. Immensely.
They are in the third year in a row where they're bringing in a transfer quarterback, a guy already with experience. Somebody else paid that quarterback to learn how to play the position, and now he gets the reward of the veteran quarterback. Is that the smartest way to do the quarterback position?
I have no idea how to begin to explain the quarterback position, Jim. I swear to gosh, I think it changes every 3 months. You're like, how do you spend your quarterback money? Because it's the most, and because it's the most high profile, and because of the it's the most volatile. It's also the most dangerous. It seems like Kurt Cignetti always had a plan from the jump. And this is his plan. And he's going to stick to it. He is willing to overspend and overpay at the quarterback position. He does not have much backup for their quarterbacks. Health in the quarterback position is very important in Indiana. Do you think it's better to have a little of both and still overspend at the position? I don't know the answer because we haven't had enough time to figure it out. But what Kurt is doing works. Is everyone going to follow that model? No, because you can't. There's too many teams. He's better at it than most. Like Howie's better at it than most in the NFL, right? There's always going to be one that's better than most. They're the unicorn. They're not in the same mixer as everybody else. So you can't use them as the business model. So it's so tricky, the quarterback position. Jimmy, I'm not bailing on this. I just think it's you have to have your plan and you have to stick to it. Am I willing to spend $1.5 million for development and backup for potential, or am I going to lose that guy? Those are the risks you have to take sometimes, Jimmy. Sometimes you have to stick yourself in the ring and say, I'm going to spend this money right now.
Yes, you are bailing on me, Andy, but that's okay. I'm going to let it go. But to further what you're saying, though, at the quarterback position, let's use two examples. We talk Kurt Cignetti. He brings in Mendoza from Cal. What a good quarterback. Everybody else could have gotten him also. Cignetti chose him. He saw whatever in him. Heisman Trophy winner, national championship quarterback, number one pick in the draft.
Better than most.
Texas Tech, hey, they went to the portal, spent lots of money, and they got Brendan Sorsby.
Yeah, it's a volatile, crazy, unpredictable market. You can't use sane and rational thinking when it comes to that position. So you have to rely on your baseline. Am I willing to overspend it and overspend at it, and then it goes sideways on me? If your answer is yes, then you went the Brendan Sorsby model. It's going to happen, Jimmy. You have to understand what you're willing to overspend on.
You know, it's the old, would you rather be lucky or good? It's best to be both. And in that position, it could go against you. Now, Andy, we're going to interrupt this conversation with our Ask Andy segment, but I want to pick it up that in quarter number four, and I want to bring it closer to home. I want to talk about Penn State. Penn State had not a perfect analogy on this quarterback question, but they did. They had an opportunity at a four-star quarterback who they didn't get. Virginia Tech, apparently they paid the price for him. And also, Penn State has had issues with a couple high-end players. They're now committed to Georgia. They also had a couple players at the lower end of their recruiting class who ended up at places like West Virginia and Virginia. Andy, we're going to get into that when we get to quarter number four. But for now, you know what time it is, right, Andy?
I do not.
It's time for Ask Andy.
Let's do it.
Right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three, Andy. It's time for Ask Andy. This is where we take your questions. We give those to Andy. Let's get started. Let's jump right in. Let's start with John in Kingston. He says, Andy, let's say you could jump into your time machine and go back to the first half of 2025 season. You have the choice of Rocco Beck or Drew Aller for your quarterback for the second half of the season. Who would be your quarterback? You do not know that Drew Aller gets injured. And I'll throw in there that you don't know that Rocco Beck was going to get injured also.
So, John, the question is for the second half of the season.
He phrases it that way, Andy, but I'm going to ask you in terms of like when the season started.
Yeah, I don't think Drew Aller was the highlight problem. He was exactly the quarterback that they sort of programmed him to be. I think they failed him as a player. So I would pick Drew Aller. I would have taken Drew Aller and his high-end ceiling and potential over Rocco Beck every day and twice on Sunday, because I don't know what the money was. It might have been somewhere in the zip code that might have been the same, but I'm still choosing Drew Aller because I don't necessarily think he was exactly, to me, this is a me thing. He was exactly who I thought he was.
Andy, let's do this the way John phrased it. Okay, after you saw him in the first half of the season, who would you have preferred for the second half?
Him. I don't think he was the problem. I don't think the core of the problem was centered on him. And I think that became clear when James was fired and Terry took over and they had to do a quarterback transition. How did they get better? It was an outstanding quarterback play at the next level that took this offense and made him go and made this team more of a cohesive unit. Off the field, in the locker room, it could have been that kind of stuff might have been problematic for Drew, but we're talking about him. Who would I take in as a quarterback? I think they have much bigger problems internally than the actual play of Drew Aller. Well, and the interception against Oregon was horrible. Horrible.
Well, Andy, there's, you know, I think with Drew Aller, obvious high side to him, but I give him a, I think he needs to take a little more responsibility for last year than you gave him, because I think there were elements of the season where he would make a mistake, you know, the interception against Oregon, but he'd also make the mistake that killed drives, you know, third and four, open receiver, and he misses them. And you give the ball up. You know, it was often you could point at his mistakes. And I'll go back to even, you know, Oregon the year before conference championship game. And it wasn't, there's the interception there, but also at the end zone, he misses an open Nick Singleton, you know, with a simple pass, throws behind him, and they have to settle for a field goal. At a critical third down play, it costs them. All right, let's move on. Eddie from Hellertown, simple question. Should teams be required to play teams in another Power Four conference in their out-of-conference games?
At least one. Yes, I say at least one. It should be a requirement that if you've got three, what is it, three, right? Like it's nine conference games. So you've got 12. Three, the demand should be at least one has to be a fellow FBS Power Four conference. Yes, I wholly, Eddie, agree with you. I think three is a bridge too far. Two would be, you're pushing the envelope. I think one's the right number, and I think it should be at, yes, you should be required starting in 2028. I feel that you should have to play at least one starting in 2028.
I agree, but I may go even further where you say, three's too much. Two might still be pushing it. I think the important thing, though, is it has to be balanced.
One.
It just like the Southeast Conference now having a nine-game conference schedule comparable to the Big Ten.
Yep.
And then either they, you know, they should, whatever the rule is, if it's one required, it's one for both conferences.
Yep.
If it's two, it's for both conferences.
I agree.
And that's what you need to be fair. All right. Let's go to Lou from Uniontown. Can you really say college football is the best sport out there, like Jim says, which I do, when you have all the problems? The portal with players, free agents every year, the players going to the highest bidder with no sense of loyalty, conferences and teams all looking at things from their self-interest only, attending a game now being priced beyond the normal family's budget. I could go on, but you get the idea. Sorry for my rant. Before you address this, Andy, I just want to say, Lou, rant all you want. That's what we do on this show. Salty Lou, we like it. All right, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, it's if you can't get yourself across the capitalism bridge and understand what the game is about today, you're going to miss what it is. Like, is a whiteout in 2019 different than it is today? No. You know what I mean? Like, the things that you love, is the experience inside of the stadium, right, at Penn State different today than it was 3 years ago? No. And now they're doing improvements, so they're looking for enhancements. But I'm saying inherently, everything you love, has your tailgate changed in the last 3 years because of the money? No. Has the game of football become less attractive because of the money? No. The devil in the details are concerning. Lou has a very valid point, but the 30,000 foot stuff is still high flying, Jimmy. It's all there. They still give it to you. You don't have to, I don't necessarily inherently a little bit care for the transactional nature of it now, but I've come to accept it, and it has helped me get across the bridge to enjoy it at the same level. Some people can't get across the bridge. I understand that. But it hasn't changed the 30,000 feet. It's still everything you want it to be.
It's interesting, Andy, and this wasn't in response to this question, but I had friends, I had neighbors over, you know, last night, and we kind of got to this conversation, and neighbor said, gee, he just can't appreciate the game now the same way he used to. And I get that. But the fact is, come Saturday, it's still the game.
It has not
changed. Game. I still look forward to it the same way. And, you know, I compare it on Sundays with the NFL games. I don't watch the game and watch a quarterback play and say, ha, he makes millions of dollars, you know, and that's wrong. I don't. It does, you know, that's, we all know it, but that doesn't change my appreciation for the game. And the college game is still the college game that we love. And if two random teams were on tomorrow, Andy, I'm tuning in.
Yeah, I think the parody has added a spice we didn't expect that is pleasantly unexpected. The parody's sort of becoming a huge draw for me. I kind of didn't mind the blue bloods and the smaller playing field. I thought, is a more level playing field and parity really going to help college football? I'll admit, I was skeptical. Man, oh, man. It turns out that that has me at hello. That has got me super engaged at another level that I never saw coming.
You know, I'm with you, Andy, and earlier in the show you mentioned Miami as part of this because Miami, you know, investing a lot of money in their teams. And I don't think that registers with people because we all remember Miami being a superpower at one point. So it doesn't feel much different. But when you start seeing teams like Indiana and Texas Tech, you know, those teams making the playoffs and winning conferences, and when you see Vanderbilt competing, you know, it's very good for the game. It's exceptional for the game. It's enjoyable seeing new blood out there. I'm not going to go as far as to say, wow, this is the best thing to ever happen to the game, you know, the money. But I think it's not a bad thing that it gives schools an alternate route to compete, and we're seeing some teams take advantage of it. All right, let's go to Chris in New York, who says, I understand the Big Ten and Southeast Conference doing their own thing and making money, but wouldn't they be better off in the long run if they negotiated TV contracts together and even adjusted conferences to make more sense and ultimately make more money from their TV contract?
Yeah, I think the Big Ten and SEC did the quick build, and the what has emerged from that is the resources and the power that they can't look back and go back. They can't drag the others along with them. It's inherently, I think, the other conferences' responsibility to find a way to narrow the gap. I don't mind. I don't inherently have a problem with a revenue sharing sort of bigger pool for everybody. But what I'm seeing now is two conferences that are deep enough to hold an interest, to create a parity that frankly is appealing. So there's no reason for them to drag the others along and be the good neighbor. You know what I mean? There's no reason for them to do it. Well, and until they're given one, I don't have a problem with it.
Andy, good question, though. Exactly, though. The perfect example of this is Cody Campbell, who's the big money guy at Texas Tech.
Correct.
He's spending lots of money. Texas Tech is dominating their conference because they're spending that money. He's not looking to share that money with his fellow members of the Big 12.
Nope.
However, he's in D.C. lobbying for the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten to share their money. Correct. Okay. So it's like if you're the guy with the lesser money, you always want it being shared. If you're the guy with the more money, you're not looking to share. That's the rule of the world, Andy. That's the way it works in real life. It's the way it works in college sports. So that's just the way it works. to expect the Southeast Conference and Big Ten to give up that advantage, they're just not going to do it. It's not going to happen. All right, Andy, that's it for Ask Andy. One more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're talking college football. More specifically, we're going to get into Penn State. Kind of, Andy, I want to get into Penn State as it relates to our conversation in segment one and two about how to build a team. And it also hits a little bit into the question we got in Ask Andy, you know, the haves versus the have-nots. Right. And, you know, in talking about Penn State, we've been talking about how do you build a roster in this times of, you know, money. And Penn State, in recruiting, there's three examples where they lost out, probably because of money. Five-star running back Kamen Spell from Pennsylvania, visited Penn State over and over, committed to James Franklin, decommitted, looked like he was going to commit again to Penn State, and then Georgia comes along, apparently offering more money. Jamar Dean, a big-time wide receiver. Penn State got in on him early. All of a sudden, his reputation builds. He's committed to Penn State. Oops. Decommits. Goes to Georgia. The final one being at the quarterback position. Peter Bork, four-star quarterback, in competition with, ironically, Georgia, our old friend James Franklin at Virginia Tech. The kid picks Virginia Tech. The theory being, you know, they made the biggest financial offer. So there's Virginia Tech taking on Penn State in Georgia and winning. Okay. So, but these examples, Andy, seem to take on that discussion we were having about, do you pay the extra dollar for premier players or do you keep, you know, value as how you build?
So I think those are all three examples. And remember, this Penn State, you know, program is an infant again, right? An infant inside this new world order that is college football. And it was, I told you Matt Campbell's going to do it different. He's going to be patient and he's going to do it smartly. I don't think there's any evaluation to be made from this, other than simply the fact that other institutions were willing to possibly overspend or spend more than at this moment, right now, in not even having anything to sell, but trying to build something slowly and smartly, just at this moment, and I think it was the right decision, Matt Campbell and his staff were not willing to overspend and commit to that at this time right now. That's going to need to change, right? That's going to need to change sooner than later. But I think it was a smart decision not to enter that ring right away and put yourself in a circus. Look, we can stay outside the circus, but we can still build.
So now, Andy, you know, getting back to our original premise that I told you about, you're in charge of teams. And again, I'm realizing different teams are at different points, but where do you spend that extra dollar? Do you do it at quarterback? Do you wait and, you know, invest otherwise? How would you do this?
So at this stage, especially, and let's look at this from Penn State. Its immediate roster need has to be the identification point. do I have to have this? Is it a greater need than a want? The need has to clearly scream at me, I need to overspend right now. And I think that's the operation, the modus operandi they're going on in this infancy stage. I think at the end of the 2026 football season, when Penn State's done playing games, I think that shifts. I think it shifts quickly. But right now, I think they couldn't find a need that they saw either in today or the very near tomorrow, in other words, 27, that was worth the money, the overvalues.
Okay, that's Penn State. I understand what you're saying. I might disagree a little bit, but now let's do the more generic. You know, you're in charge of teams. Where are you spending your money? Where are you investing? How do you build, Andy?
I'm still a big subscriber to the inside out model. You can always buy a quarterback, is my thought. You're always going to have to continually value that differently than any other position on the field, in my thought. So you take the quarterback and you put it on its own island, right? That's its own island. Willing, need to overspend, keep that one. Then you go inside out. For me, where I'm spending money first, I'm going to start on the interior offensive line and the interior of the defensive line. The value proposition is there, right? Like, you know, what did it say? Interior offensive lineman, 300 to 700,000, right? Interior defensive lineman, 500K to 1.5 million. Little bit more on the defensive side, little higher value proposition, build from the inside out. I'm going to spend some money there. That would be priority one, where I'm going to allocate some money first, come up with my budget, my number, and what I'm looking at player-wise, and spend money there first, build it from the inside out, is just the theory. And that's where I'm starting. That's my step one.
Andy, and I think that's a very solid way to do it. If you're starting your team, those are solid investments.
Boring, but solid.
Yeah. But when you look to the NFL for the model, the example is, hey, running backs, don't invest high draft picks, don't invest a lot of money at running back. Howie Roseman agrees, it seems overall, till he had an opportunity for a special player named Saquon Barkley.
Correct.
And they ended up winning a Super Bowl, and he gets rushes for 2,000 yards. Okay. Understand your own situation. Now, my question, you know, the Penn State model, we hear Derek Hoosier talking. When we were with him a couple weeks ago, he talked about Iowa State and how they built. I feel like they built on value, like what you talked about, value across the board. Got the right player in, paid a fair salary. That's what he talked about, fair compensation, and they built a good team. Now the problem is they're at Penn State. Do you have to now do it differently and perhaps take the chance? We had the question about Rocco Beck versus Drew Aller. Rocco Beck may have the higher floor. Drew Aller has the higher ceiling. If you want to win championships, when do you take the chance on the higher ceiling?
After the 2026 season. It's got to happen sooner than later. I understand his premise. Like, he can transfer the model because of the transactional and transitional nature of moving from Iowa State to Penn State. I wholeheartedly like it, feel it's a strong baseline, but you can't stay there as a blue blood at Penn State and compete for championships. You simply can't. They can hold it as their baseline, but they're going to have to move the needle differently starting in, say, December and January and February as we move forward. You know, when I say end of 26, start of 27, they're going to have to start, instead of dipping their toe in the water, they're going to have to start putting both feet and getting their ankles underwater, right? They've got to move starting sooner than later, not drastically, but makes a move. Well,
here I think is the issue with that theory, Andy, is I'll use Cayman Spell again as the example. We're talking about right now, this is a new team. They're in their infancy, as you said, this program. The problem is he's a class of 27 recruit.
Correct.
You recruit him now, you sign him in December. He doesn't take the field till the 27 season, and correct, he's a first-year player. Now, running backs often could come right in, but it may be a second year till he would be here on 27, 28, 29 seasons. So if you're not picking up in this recruiting class, Peter Bork, the quarterback, good chance he wouldn't play in 27 anyway. So if you're recruiting him now, you're recruiting him for maybe the 28 season. You know, so when you're talking recruiting, you're talking about a couple years down the road.
Jimmy, patience. They're not willing to overspend right now. And these were overspends in their estimation right now. They can't lose all four of those. Say you have four of those in the transfer portal / 28 recruiting class, and there's five of them. They can't go 0-5. They can go 0-4 right now, but they can't go 0-5 or 0-4 in the near future, Jimmy. It's okay right now because they can, first year, there's a little bit of a honeymoon, a little bit of patience. They can ride the wave right now. They can't ride the wave sooner than later, and they can't ride the wave next year.
The problem is, as I said, these are not year one players.
I agree.
They're at the earliest, year two players, more likely year three players. And, you know, by not bringing them in, if it is a sacrifice, you're sacrificing essentially 3 years, Andy. Now, where I am okay with some of this is with Kamen Spell, the five-star special player, is he that special, though? Or is right, this running back where I think I can go get, you know, the couple running backs I got, I feel like, hey, I got it, not just a good value, but guys who could play, and maybe they're not at that quite at that level. At the quarterback position, Peter Bork, again, in talking with Derek Hoosier, they talked about Will Wood, the three-star they got, and his eyes lit up. So, you know, do they believe he's as good as Peter Bork? Go ahead.
So they're willing to pay a value for these guys. They were willing to spend X amount of dollars. Another institution demanded them to spend more. Was it worth spending it right now for later? And their answer was no. They can do that, but I don't think you can do that consistently and still build a championship team. In other words, you got to get some top 100 players on your roster, whether they're transfer portal or recruits. You've got to backfill some top 100 guys. They don't have one now. It's okay. But if you enter the 2027 season and you have one top 100 player, whether it's a recruit or a transfer portal guy on your roster, then you have a problem. It's not a problem now. It'll be a problem 12 months from now. They've got to start maybe overspending on a value proposition the way they see it in order to bring some of that more high-end talent in. They have the resources. They're Penn State.
Andy, my only disagreement with you is if that five-star running back makes sense next year, I think he makes sense now also. All right, Andy, that is it for the show. Way too fast. Make sure you all join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.